This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. 4 years ago, West Virginia had its first COVID-19 case, and the news department is looking back on all that has changed since the world came to a halt in 2020. This morning, we discuss education.
Our teachers and staff were really stressed throughout the pandemic in that they were trying to provide instruction in a way that they had not in the past.
That story and more coming up this West Virginia Morning. Support for West Virginia Morning is proudly provided by Luke Frazier. A legal defense for sex abuse no longer qualifies in West Virginia courtrooms. Jack Walker reports on how this could help survivors.
Marriage no longer qualifies as a legal defense for sexual abuse in West Virginia. That's because on Friday, Governor Jim Justice signed a law removing all remaining marital exemptions for sex abuse charges. Now, Sarah Belvins O'Toole of Branch's Domestic Violence Shelter said survivors can find both legal recourse and closure.
So you can imagine the heartbreak that a survivor might feel if they're going through the legal process and all of a sudden, because they were married to that person, what happened to them is not validated.
With the law's passage, advocates like Belvins O'Toole hope that survivors across the state can access more support. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
A U.S. Department of Energy grant will take the carbon dioxide emissions out of an aluminum plant in Jackson County. Curtis Tate has more.
The Energy Department will make as much as $75 million available to Constellium to produce aluminum with low or no carbon. The Ravenswood plant produces aluminum products for aerospace, defense, marine, and transportation. Among other improvements, its furnaces would be able to burn clean hydrogen, which generates no carbon emissions. Constellium would be among five aluminum facilities nationwide to receive the investment. U.S. Senator Joe Manchin said the plant will receive another $23 million from the spending bill Congress passed on Friday.
More investments have come to our state than ever before in our history at one time. We've got more people interested in coming to West Virginia.
The Energy Department also plans to locate a new aluminum smelter in Kentucky. It would be the nation's first in 45 years. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
Political analysts say the two Republican candidates for the U.S. Senate in the upcoming May primary election give voters some particular and troubling food for thought. The candidates themselves say voters need to focus on the positives, not the negatives. Randy Yowie has our story.
The latest numbers from the 538 ABC News polling website offers an average of all polls available on West Virginia's U.S. Senate race. 538 numbers show Governor Jim Justice getting 55% of the vote, while U.S. Congressman Alex Mooney tallies 17%. And looking closer at the candidates' records, Marshall University Associate Professor of Political Science Mary Beth Beller says voters should also know something about Justice's legal and financial entanglements.
The banks, Carter Bank and Trust in Virginia, is preparing to auction off some of the governor's property because he's not paying his bills. We also have a lot of people who have worked for his mines and are now retired who say that because the governor's businesses have not paid their premiums in pensions, that their health care gets disrupted. And so we need to look at the service record of these people in office, but also out of office.
Asked by West Virginia Public Broadcasting in a recent media briefing specifically about what voters should think regarding those legal and financial entanglements, Justice said maybe he could have done a little better, but he said his business issues are not germane to his political life.
You know, to be perfectly honest, I don't think that this will be a distraction in any way at all. None. And if I did, you know, I wouldn't do it. I mean, why am I doing it? Randy, why am I doing it? Am I doing it for me? I mean, are you kidding me? At the end of the day, the only reason in the world that I absolutely decided to run for governor, the only reason in the world that I've absolutely decided to run for the Senate is nothing to do with me, nothing to do with any of my businesses, nothing to do with me in any way. I just want to serve and to try to help.
His opponent, Congressman Alex Mooney, says the Justice Campaign cornerstone of running for office as a successful businessman does make his legal and financial entanglements relevant to the campaign.
He has a terrible reputation for not paying bills, and he obviously has mismanaged things. And you see now, you know, him at Mr. Justice criticizing me because I don't support the overspending we're seeing at the federal government level. We're bankrupting our country. We're creating a big problem. And that's the last guy we need in there.
Beller says voters need to be aware of Mooney's record when it comes to the ongoing congressional ethics investigation. Mooney has been accused of accepting impermissible gifts in the form of a trip to Aruba, using official resources, including staff time for campaign work and personal errands, and campaign disbursements that may not be legitimate. West Virginia Public Broadcasting asked the congressman how voters should consider the ethics investigation. This is how he responded.
We're answering all the questions with the regular committee and dealing with that. We've got that, you know, we were dealing with that within the proper means. You know, the voters are concerned about issues of every day, like inflation and what their federal government's going to do to make sure they can, you know, afford everyday groceries. And so that's what I'm focused on.
Okay. I mean, did any of these things really happen, these gifts and resources and campaign disbursements?
I've publicly already answered those questions. You're talking about stuff that's 4 years old now.
That investigation is still pending and has not been closed. With such a widespread gap in the polls favoring Justice, Beller believes Mooney remains in hard campaign mode by hoping voters ignore his own issues and that Justice's legal and financial entanglements might make it impossible to hold office.
If something would happen and Justice would not be able to carry out the nomination, if he gets the nomination, you know, then it behooves Mooney to stay in contact and let voters know about him.
West Virginia's primary is May 14th. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Randy Yowie in Charleston.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. It's 7:51. Partly sunny today in the eastern panhandle. Otherwise, rain and gusty wind, high temperatures in the 50s. Breezy tonight with a chance of rain, lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, a chance of rain, but some clearing in the afternoon, highs in the 50s and 60s. Support for WVPB is provided by the West Virginia Land Trust, protecting special places for local communities. Details at wvlandtrust.org. Four years ago, the COVID-19 pandemic changed daily life for everyone. But the adjustments were perhaps most acute for schools and students. Then a deputy superintendent, State Superintendent Michelle Blatt, spoke with reporter Chris Schultz about adapting learning for the COVID-19 pandemic and its continued effects on the state's schools.
Can you explain to me what that March was like 4 years ago?
So, I mean, we had definitely had discussions about COVID and what we were hearing from other states and around the world, you know, kind of putting plans in place. But a lot of the discussions, especially with our local health officials and DHHR, were that, you know, there'll be some mitigation strategies that we want to put in place, but, you know, we will not be closed down schools or anything like that. And so we were kind of really caught off guard when the governor did then on March 13th shut down schools and send everyone home on that Friday. Everything really happened fast. Had to have all hands on deck, of course, in our counties and here at the Department of Education to start thinking about how we were going to not only teach the children from home, but also provide meals and other services that the school system provides for them.
How did that come together, and what was the top priority for schools across the state?
We know that in a rural state like West Virginia, the internet's not something that we could rely on in all of our schools. We started working with superintendents immediately to determine, you know, which ones had virtual programs already existing in their counties, which ones had learning management systems that would work to support something like this, and then ramping up the virtual school system that we have here at the Department of Education that serves many counties. And then thinking about what about the students that do not have internet service, did not have computers or something available at that point at home. So there was a lot of our counties initially that first week or so were doing deploying computers out to the schools, whether it was delivery through the buses or they were having on-site pickups so that all the students had their devices at home. A lot of ordering and trying to get in additional computers so that every student had one. But then also a lot of our counties had to rely initially on working through packets of activities and worksheets that we actually ended up distributing in many counties as we distributed the meals on the bus routes. And then we really started a lot focusing on how could we expand the internet access across the state. And we actually deployed staff from various places along with the National Guard to actually put in wireless routers and Wi-Fi spots in parking lots of all of our schools. They were at the libraries so that students that did not have access to the internet would have a way to access their information or at least download the activities that they needed for the week.
We've heard a lot since students came back to the classroom about mental health. When did that become apparent as an issue? And I also don't hear as much about, you know, the impact on teachers and staff.
I think our teachers and staff were really stressed throughout the pandemic in that they were trying to provide instruction in a way that they had not in the past. The only person really seeing some of these families was bus drivers that were out delivering these things to the students. So I think it really took a toll on our teachers and staff. You know, the pandemic took a toll on everyone and the concerns and things that you have personally and with your own family. But when you're in a school, you consider those students your family as well. And not being able to be with their students and to help them through a lot of this. That was something that we did talk a lot about and address during the pandemic. So I think we were aware that there would be some mental health issues and some other things when students returned to school.
What can you tell me about that process to bring students back into the classroom?
Once the vaccine became available, we were instrumental here at the department to help coordinate all of the vaccine clinics across the counties because the schools were the best place to bring the communities together and to provide those vaccines. We had weekly calls with all of our superintendents throughout the pandemic. And so we started looking and, you know, kind of researching together what is the best way, knowing that our counties would need to make some of these decisions with their local boards and their communities. When we first started back to school, you know, we had students on a variety of schedules. Some had a hybrid schedule where they were in the building 2 or 3 days and still remote for a couple of days. You know, there was a variety of ways that our counties chose to do that. And they had that local flexibility because all of our communities are different.
What do you see as the legacy of COVID-19 and the pandemic within West Virginia schools?
As we start looking back at the schools and the legacy, we're still struggling to regain the learning that was lost of our students. You hear a lot of talk about, as you mentioned earlier, the mental health or behavior issues in the school. You know, we have students that did not consistently have school for 4 years. And when you're looking at your younger learners, you know, they didn't learn the social interactions and the way that school works. We still have, you know, third, fourth, fifth graders that are not only catching up on their learning, but in also just how to get through the day and how school works and how to make friends and, you know, all of those different things. I think we are in a better place in the long run because I think people really got to see the value of public education and all of the different things that's provided through our public schools. Virtual learning works for some students, but the majority of our students need a teacher in front of them and they need that daily interaction with other children.
That was State Superintendent Michelle Blatt speaking with reporter Chris Schultz about the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic on the state's school system. A longer version of this interview is available at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University. West Virginia Morning is produced with help from Bill Lynch, Brianna Heaney, Chris Schultz, Curtis Tate, Emily Rice, Eric Douglas, Jack Walker, Liz McCormick, and Randy Yowie. Emily Rice produced today's show. I'm your host, Teresa Wills. This is West Virginia Morning.